All right, folks, welcome back to the latest Mountain West Wire Basketball Podcast Edition. You know where to find us, mwwire.com, Twitter, all that fun stuff, mwcwire. Jeremy Moss hanging out with Eli Bethker to talk hoops, of course, right? Basketball. We're almost at the end of non-conference play, almost.
We're almost, and I am definitely needing to catch up on some sleep these next few days because Mountain West has been playing some absurdly late games the last 48 hours, and I'm starting to feel it at this point.
Yeah, thanks, Nevada. Thanks, UNLV.
Yeah.
Just saying. Yeah, there's a... Oh, I have a quick question for you, because we're going to get to the games and everything, but I didn't really watch a ton of that Nevada-TCU game. I sort of did. How much did that volleyball game preempt the basketball game? Because I thought I was daydreaming. I fell asleep, woke up like, oh, that game's on. Let me turn it on for a minute and watch. Did that volleyball game go until, like, midnight or past 11 Pacific time?
It was really late. I think the Nevada-TCU game did not switch over to ESPNU until the, I think it was under 12 timeout of the second half. So it was deep into the game. I'm pretty sure it was either under 12 or under 16.
And it was on ESPNU to start, right?
Yes, and then switched over late.
How did the volleyball games go that long?
I don't know why you would schedule NCAA tournament games regardless of the sport that late. That seems kind of odd to me.
Yeah, it's... And to go that... Not just late, but... That late beyond?
Yeah, that's like, I don't know.
I've seen volleyball. I know they can go, what, I think it's five sets maximum if it goes a distance. But I'm like, wait, am I on the right channel? What's going on? Like, I did doze off for a minute. What's going on?
Yeah, that was odd. But it was well into the second half before the game switched over. And I don't know which teams were playing that volleyball game. But, man, I hope their fans were able to see what they needed to see because that was a late one.
It's, is that the right call, though? Stick with the scheduled program? Or should they switch volleyball to Here's the thing. NCAA tournament, great. I don't care if it's a women's sport or not, whatever, non-revenue, but that's a top 25 matchup. Each team was ranked.
Yeah, it is. I think if you make it clear of what the channel is on, I think you can probably stick with it. But and we got some mentions like, oh, they're getting bumped for women's volleyball. I mean, hey, it's a tournament game. Let them be shown on their channel that they were supposed to be shown on because it's a big game for them, so might as well stick it with them.
I'll say this, it's better than CBS Sports Network because either it's not shown or it's online only.
Oh, yeah. That is true.
Let's get going here. Since I brought up Nevada, we're going to change it and talk about Nevada. All right, so Nevada, volleyball, whatever. They get their limelight. But let's get to Nevada. We were going to start with San Diego State, but we'll get to another team that's on heartbreak as well, but with Nevada. Sorry, had to do it. So, first off, Nevada fans, don't get mad at us. Your team's finally really good. Not finally, but good again. And with that comes a weird feeling because, hey, my team's good. I need to defend my team if anybody says anything negative. Because you had some Twitter interactions without really being negative, just pointing some obvious things out. Because, it's tough.
It's tough because I'm trying to put out some facts about what the reality of it is of Nevada's potential for receiving at large right now. And basically, if you go through their schedule, they have a top 50 win against Rhode Island at home. They have a top 100 home win against Davidson. And then they had this huge week where they could have picked up road or neutral wins against top 25 Big 12 opponents, or presumably top 25 by season's end in Texas Tech and TCU. So I try to be lenient when I use the words must win when it comes to these teams, because just declaring any win, any game must win in November and December could come off as a bit hot takey, I guess. But if you look at recent history, the teams that are in Nevada's situations and presumably one or two bid leagues, that they really need to pick up these road wins against quality teams when they get the opportunities, and Nevada came up short this week. So
there's only so much you can get with a quality loss, right? And so it's like, I get it. It's like, okay, you play good teams. You beat Rhode Island, which is really good, but it's a home game, which not but a home game, but it's a game where, okay, you're at home. It's still a good win, but TCU's neutral site, Texas Tech on the road. And both those games, we'll talk about both of them, but the big picture is the way this conference has been gone the past couple years, you have to win these games. Not every single one, like you said, but we're hoping to split, because going to Texas Tech is difficult. Playing out in LA against a good TCU team, which it was, I believe that was their first game away from home. Not their first, because TCU has not played a true road game all season. I believe, was that their first game away from Fort Worth? Or is it just another one of their neutral games? Because I read somewhere that they haven't.
They still have yet to play a true road game, but this okay. is their third neutral game
that,
of the season.
Like, these two losses on the road, the way the committee's mm-hmm. doing new things now, it'll say, okay, they lost a good two good teams away. But again, it's like, they started Texas Tech. They had a, 10-point lead in the second half and blew it. They had to have their star players play the whole game, essentially. 45 minutes they had. They only played seven deep that game. I don't see how you're going to beat any good team going seven deep in overtime and have two of your starters play 45 minutes.
It's tough because it's almost the same rotation, or at least numbers-wise, the same number of guys that they used last year, despite having what most would say is a deeper team this season. So I feel like Eric Musselman's probably pondering what he might change going forward. I did see that he's obviously disappointed with their defense of these last two games. They gave up an 83 points average for these past two games against Texas Tech and TCU. So I did ponder the idea of moving to a 2-3 zone, or at least blending it in these last three or four non-conference games. So we might see some changes. I think they're still maybe a bit more top-heavy with their starters than we probably thought heading into the season. Maybe they're not as deep as we expected, but I would think that you wouldn't need to play two guys for 45 minutes in an overtime game. Although Cody Martin and Caleb Martin are excellent, but you'd think, especially with some of the injuries they've battled the first couple of weeks, that you could give them at least a bit of a breather.
Or 50 points. That's a good thing, but it's like their bench has 3 points. But here's the problem in the game. People mentioned that Rhode Island game, a ton of free throw disparity. Well, Texas Tech made 12 more free throws. That was basically the game right there. When they make that many more free throws, Nevada was amazing for 3-point range, but it started being a free throw contest a little bit, and they just lapsed a little bit and had to run. Nevada gave up those big runs in the second half, and they tried. I don't know. It's just who didn't Nevada have the last shot and took a 3-pointer? Was that how it finished up in regulation? Didn't I tweet something about terrible end of call play or end of play call or something?
Yeah, they did have a shot at the end to take the win. I'm pretty sure it's Jordan Caroline, and I can't say for sure. But Nevada had their chances, and you can't expect to pick up a road win against a team like Texas Tech. But, man, it's going to sting for Nevada moving forward these next few months, because they know that they could have had this huge win in a true neutral site against a top 25 mm-hmm. Big 12 opponent. And you look back, I did some research over the weekend because I wanted to just see for myself what it's like for a team that's in the same situation as Nevada. And I found out that over the last 5 seasons, 35 non-power conference teams have clinched at-large bids, and 32 of those had at least one win over a power conference team, which is something that Nevada will lack. And also 28 of the 36 had a top 100 road or neutral victory. And Nevada doesn't have a top 200 road or neutral victory. So that's definitely concerning. It's not the end of the world, though, because we have seen teams get in without that. And with the way the committee is favoring the metrics, like KenPom and Sagarin and BPI and all those, it's going to be really tough to keep a team out like Nevada if they're in a top 25 by season's end, which is something that we've seen with like Wichita State and VCU and Gonzaga and some of those programs the last few years. So as long as Nevada keeps winning, they should be okay. But the situation right now is not as pretty as you would think heading into the season. So those are going to be two tough losses.
Any sort of bench, like the TCU game, TCU was ahead the whole time, so it wasn't like the Texas Tech game where they had a big lead and kind of blew it. TCU led the first half, was it 31-19 at some point, double digit lead in the first half. Nevada came back, but they were never really back in that game because they were 2-3-pointers, 6-18. TCU made their 3-pointers, and I guess going 20-30 is not great from the free throw line. But look at this again: 38 minutes for Caleb Martin, Cody Martin 40 minutes, or I don't know, it's C Martin. What's the difference here? Whatever, they combined for 78 minutes. Sorry, I just look at C Martin on the chart. You'd think ESPN would write out their first name or something, or at least CACO. But they 38 minutes, 40 minutes. Caroline 38 minutes. and then you had Lindsey Drew 30 minutes. It's like, and Lindsey Drew scored 0 points. Is that correct? Is this no shot?
Yeah, that's right. But he's not really much of a scorer, so that's not completely out of the ordinary. You want other guys to shoot, but that's 30 still...
plus minutes, and he doesn't take one shot. Is he really useful? I know he does stuff for Nevada, the reason he starts and why he plays, but and he had 5 fouls, which doesn't help either. But that makes their bench or their depth even worse if he can't score any points. I'm not saying he needs to score 15 a game, but you got to give him something. You can't score like he scores 6 points a game. Great, but he's already had is that the only game he went 0-0? Yeah, sorry, I thought I was looking at something else, but like he's had three games where he had 0 field goals made. He's been goose egg twice. He has to score at least 8 points a game. It's like you can't have a guy play that many minutes to take up space on the floor to do nothing. Not, I mean, offensively, I should say. Because their bench combined for, what, 45 minutes? 38 minutes? I get your point. He doesn't score offensively, but it's kind of a liability for a team that goes 7 deep or 8 deep.
Yeah, when they go cold, you want to have a guy that steps up. And Nevada did have a few spells in that TCU game where it was tough because whenever Nevada seemed to find their groove offensively, TCU just came right back and scored. And when Nevada went cold, TCU probably put a couple buckets in. So every time the Wolfpack inched, TCU had a response. I think Kendall Stevens had a rough night too. He was 1 for 5 from deep, but he had a couple that didn't hit anything. And I think he had one that went right off the backboard. And Stevens is a great player, but he's going to have nights like that. He's just streaky. He'll hit 3 or 4 threes in one game, and he'll have a night like he had on Saturday or on a Friday, I guess it was. But it's too bad, and I think that Nevada will pick up the pieces from this game, and they'll be fine moving forward. But Texas Tech and TCU definitely laid down the blueprint of how to beat a team like Nevada. And I guess for the sake of Musselman and company is that they know that these teams will be hunting after them this season, and hopefully they can build up a game plan over these next 4 non-conference games and use it to their advantage moving into league play.
So what do they have going for, like, their best chances for a good victory? Is it just like Boise, Fresno, San Diego State, maybe UNLV if they move up? Like, are those going to be top 100 wins or top 100 potential wins?
Yeah, Boise should be, UNLV should be. San Jose State probably isn't at this point, so you're probably looking at those two. Fresno State might make a run to the top 100, but you're going to need to probably that road game against Boise State on February 14th, that's going to be a big one. And the final two games of the season are also huge, at UNLV and at San Diego State to finish the season. So that final week or so will be really big for Nevada. And you just can't afford bad losses. You don't want to lose to any weak teams at home. You don't want to lose to Colorado State or San Jose State. And if you can pick up as many road wins as possible from here until Selection Sunday, then you put yourself in a position to at least grab an at-large if you're in that position.
Is Nevada, one last thing, we'll move on to the other teams, but is Nevada at a point now, if they want to at-large, they just need to compile a massive number of wins?
I'm always
almost
hesitant.
It's close, right?
Well, obviously you want as many wins as possible, and I think it's always hard to look at a 27-28 win team and say, like, hey, these guys don't belong in the tournament, just because you see that gaudy win total, and that's kept a number of teams in the tournament field in years past. But at the same time, we've seen that with Colorado State just a couple years ago. They won 27 games, and I think San Diego State in 2015 won.
Was it Monmouth in 2016, the same thing? Won like 30 games and got left out?
Yeah, they got left out, and San Diego State, I think, won 26 or 27 and got left out a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. So win total isn't as valuable as I think many people believe, but if they win quality road games and hold their own at home, don't have any bad losses, they should be okay. Just don't want to lose at home to New Mexico, or don't want to lose against San Jose State at home, and you want to beat teams like San Diego State and Boise State. So,
okay.
Yeah, I guess time will tell. We'll see when you start measuring resumes and whatnot.
We'll see. It's still early. Okay, so let's move on to the other team in the state of Nevada, the Rebels, UNLV. So I think we can both say we're pretty much wrong on this team for the most part.
Yeah, I'd
say
so.
It's okay. It's okay. We're fine. We did our power poll. Did you put them number 2 again, UNLV?
Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm. I think I did as well. They beat Illinois. which they almost blew it. There's another one of those late tips on Saturday night. Started about 10 o'clock, I think, Mountain Time, 9 Pacific. Sounds about right. But they beat... I haven't seen too much of Illinois. They played okay. This isn't the same Illinois team from a couple years ago, or at least a decade ago, right?
Do you mean, like, in terms of being that good?
Yeah, they're not that good, are they? Or not as good as used to be.
No, they're not as good as, like, the late 20, or late 2000s Illinois team, but they should
Darren
be.
Darren Williams, not that team?
A little bit. No, not that good, no.
Okay, so it's still beating a team from the Big Ten, which people will say, okay, that's a good win. They are, like, they beat, who they beat? Oral Roberts in Illinois, is that their two games this week?
Yes.
Did we talk about the Arizona game? Yeah, we did last time. I'm trying to remember when we recorded.
Mm-hmm.
So, where do we put them at? Because Brandon McCoy, really good. He blocks everything that comes his way. He's a presence below. He had 22 points, led the team in score, or almost led the team. He had Jovan Morin, who, amazing game, making his free throws. That's what practice, folks, 14 of 18.
That's right. They're always free.
Hit the free throw line. So, like, them playing Illinois, like, I didn't watch a ton of this game. I watched part of the second half until it got late, and Eli, 48 free throws, 48. Come on.
Yeah, I think it was the ninth highest free throw total of the whole season of any team. So it's,
good for them,
yeah.
But man, I got tired. I'm like, I'm done with this. I can't keep watching. I'm going to bed.
The free throw disparity is just ridiculous. UNLV attempted 48 and Illinois attempted just 15. So you won't see many games like that one.
You won't, but like watching this game, like UNLV had a 9-point lead in the start of the second half. And then slowly but surely, Illinois chipped away. UNLV missed a couple buckets here and there. I was like, crap, is this going to be a game where they lose? They held their own 1-7, but it's also a couple things when I see that. They're a team that's still kind of a young team, still sort of new talent, because, like, McCoy wasn't here last year, Morin wasn't here last year. A lot of guys, transfers come in who are finally eligible. It's still a team that's working its way together. And so those are not uncommon. Like the Arizona game, they had a lead. They kind of let that go away. Part of it because Arizona's good. Part of it, UNLV's wasn't in these type of situations last year to play good teams. They were getting blown out last year. So, like, when you have a guy like McCoy who can block the shots, he's double-double, you have guys who could score, they're just a team where they're finally getting it together. And, like, we talked about this before, who's going to guard McCoy? Utah State has no size. Aztec's defense isn't as good as they thought it would be. Maybe Nevada, just because they're athletic, but nobody has the size to hold up McCoy. He's clearly freshman of the year at this point through non-conference play. I don't think anybody's played close to him or newcomer at all. I don't think anybody's in his same category. So, like, they beat Illinois, who's a top about 100 team, KenPom, 100, 101, somewhere in that range. I'm curious what they want to see do in league play because they've held their own. Like, they're not getting blown out. They depends what you think of Arizona, who's not his number two team, but they're not losing to bad teams. They've lost to Arizona and a really good Northern Iowa team. So I'm wondering if this is a team where not that they figured it out, but like what happens when they play, let's say, like at San Jose State? Not that the Spartans are good, but it's a road game, it's a league game, and they came off the Boise game, or they go to Air Force at altitude and play a team like that. I want to see when they play those type of games where they're not great teams, but they're away from home, and it's where they really matter. It's hard to tell if they're a team that's not going to matter. Because while they're still very good, it's still a team where I could see them stumbling here and there in league play just because of their inexperience, especially when the season wears on for like guys who didn't play last year, transferred in, or McCoy. He's never played. He's played a lot of basketball. I don't know if the under-19 thing will hurt him just because he played high school. He moved to under-19, go for a week over there. He's playing 30-something games in college basketball. Sometimes you see those freshmen, they played, what do you play in high school, 25 games maybe? They don't play this many games in this high level. So that could be something to watch for down the road. I know it's speculating, but I don't know. Like, are they really this good at 8-2? Are they a team that you think can – we put them number two in our rankings, so are they legit?
Yeah, I think they are. And I think at the very least they present a pretty intriguing mismatch for the two games that they'll play in Nevada because I've seen – just about, I wouldn't say every minute of UNLV this season, but I've tuned into at least a bit of every single one of their games, and you can see just how difficult it is to defend and really score on this UNLV team, which I was surprised coming in because I thought their defense was going to be pretty lacking, but they get it after it defensively and they have a lot of energy. But I think you're right because we've only seen them play in a true road environment once this season. That was the overtime loss to Northern Iowa. So we've mentioned it countless times of just how difficult it is to win in the road in league play. Mm-hmm. And obviously topping a team like San Jose State or Utah State probably isn't that difficult of a feat when you have the athletes like UNLV does. But when they go on the road to play Boise or on the road to play Nevada or San Diego State, that's going to be a game that probably goes down to the final minute or so, because you're playing other experienced teams that are well coached, that play in front of a passionate home crowd, and UNLV just isn't used to that yet. And so what they have between now and late January in terms of road games, they have Pacific, which is a pretty bad WCC team, San Jose State, which will probably finish last in the MWC, Air Force, which will either finish last or 10th, and Colorado State, which has been pretty brutal out of the gates, until they play Fresno State on the road on January 23rd. So they do have four road games between now and late January, but they are against relatively weak teams that we don't expect much out of them. So it's hard to really get a gauge of what this team will do on the road until at least late January, early February. So that works in the UNLV's favor, I guess, from a win-loss standpoint. But, I mean, when they need to win the games on the road, when they play Boise State and Nevada back-to-back on the road and then have San Diego State just a couple weeks after, we'll find out a lot about this team.
It's a good point. I didn't realize they've only played one true road game when they went to Northern Iowa. Because the Illinois game was at the MGM. Wasn't the Utah game at MGM as well?
Yes.
Okay, so it's in town, but that's good scheduling on their part, though, to limit road games, I guess, with this newish team with young guys and Menzies here, too. So you're right, that big weekend when they get, like I said, not till what, January, February, sorry, Boise, Nevada. So they're legit. The only issue I see right now with them having, again, young on the road, and sometimes they have lapses throughout parts of the game, which is not out of the question for teams that are young, and could happen to any team. So we'll see.
The thing, one other thing to note about this team, they're pretty much two late baskets away from being 10-0 and one of the final seven undefeated teams in the country right now. And that would probably place them in the top 25. So if they just had different fortunes in the Northern Iowa and Arizona game, they'd stand 10-0 with two quality wins over Northern Iowa and Arizona. So I think UNLV is much better out of the gate than we expected. And the rest of their non-conference play is relatively light. They're at Pacific, home against Mississippi Valley State, and home against Northern Colorado. So they'll probably be 11-2 by the time they host Boise State to open league play. So that's going to be a good test for them, see how they defend Chandler Hutchison and the Broncos' perimeter offense. So that'll be a good game to watch.
Yeah, and one last thing. They moved, I don't know if it's official today, but they've been in top 100 KenPom of late. So they moved up from like 130 and stuff. So wherever they're at, they're top 100. That's very nice. So let's go to San Diego State. Let me ask you this, Matt. I'm thinking football for a moment. Sorry, Eli. What has surprised you? Aztec fans overreact to losses. What has surprised you one bit?
It wouldn't surprise me, but man, I think I mentioned on the last podcast that San Diego State would not lose this home game against California, and they managed to come up short against a team that has gotten blown out by Chaminade. They looked horrible and lost their home opener to USC Riverside, and also got leveled by Central Arkansas. So I don't really know what to tell you. This Aztecs team still just has so many issues on both sides of the floor. And I mean, calling for Brian Dutcher's head right now is absurd, but it's just remarkable to see where this program has gone the last couple of years, because they just don't seem to have any sort of identity.
Yeah, it's like Malik Pope's doing pretty good. Like, and Marcus Mitchell, or yeah, Matt Mitchell, sorry, freshman playing pretty well. But again, it comes down to like their defense. People, like, the reason they're so good under Steve Fisher, defense was like elite, like top 10 elite. And offense would be good enough. Like guys like Xavier Thames, they'd be good enough. They had scored just enough points with like Jamal or Franklin on the, Franklin. He's over in China getting MVP awards. So they don't have any offensive guy. Mitchell had that 31-point outburst early in the year, which we're like, slow down, relax. That's good, but hold on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's great, but their defense isn't great. Like, giving up 44%, that's fine, but it's not elite. But here's the problem. Like, I had a podcast title, I think it was 2 years ago we did this. Can San Diego State shoot 48% from the field? The answer is still no at the moment. 2 years later, we're still searching for that. That's their problem. Defense is okay. Offense has nothing. Like, 62 points isn't going to cut it. And especially against Cal, it's like, geez, Cal's just, they're probably the worst team in the Pac-12. Right? Who's worse than them? Washington State's improved. Oregon State's pretty bad, but is Cal the worst team in the Pac-12?
I would say
Washington's pretty bad, right? Yeah. You know about that.
Yeah. I mean, Cal definitely has the worst resume to date, but it's odd. And Mark Ziegler mentioned this in his three thoughts that San Diego State, I guess the worst thing, how do I phrase this? The worst thing than having poor shooters that don't think they can shoot is having poor shooters that think they can shoot. And like, you have guys that are just jacking it up from the perimeter, taking jumpers early in possession when this team ranks, I think, in the 300s in three-point percentage, but they have no problem lofting them up from deep. And like, I hope they get this figured out, but it's just the offensive inconsistency is just ridiculous. They seem to put up 90 whenever they play a weak team and have spurts of 5-6 minutes where they go without a field goal against strong opponents or just average opponents like California. And I've mentioned this so many times that Trey Kill and Jeremy Hensley, which are your two backcourt studs, they never seem to be on the same page in terms of scoring. You'll have one night where maybe Kel will score 18 and then Jeremy Hensley goes cold and can only hit maybe 3 of 9 shots. I think that they haven't combined to shoot 40 or 50%. I'm gonna butcher this statistic, but I found something a few weeks ago that since Kel and Hensley have been playing together for the last 3 seasons, they've combined to shoot over 50% in much less than half their games. So just pretty inconsistent. The scoring just isn't there right now, and the defense is still really good. It's 31st in the country, but it isn't good enough to the point where it can shoulder some of the inconsistencies of the offense for a team that currently ranks 115th in adjusted offensive efficiency right now.
You know what the rank in three-point percentage? 304th.
Oh, man.
And there's only 351 D1 teams. I was looking through a couple of stats. Part of this is from Ziegler's piece, other stuff I looked up. But, yeah, they're bottom 50, essentially. This would be their worst three-point shooting percentage if it continues on this pace since they were 5-23 in Fisher's first season.
The thing that's concerning is, if you're bad at three-point shooting, obviously that's not something that's going to benefit for your team. But if you're 304th in three-point percentage and you're also 304th in three-point attempts, that means it means you're self-aware, right? So you know you can shoot the three, so don't shoot the three. But I'm seeing right now on KenPom that they're 216th in three-point attempt rate. And so that's still less than average, but they're shooting, that's almost 100 ranks higher than what their three-point percentage says. So that's a bit of an identity issue, I think, right there. And you have big men down low that can score, too. I mean, hand the ball into Malik Pope, and he'll probably be able to get you a bucket, or Jalen McDaniels, who hasn't seemed to hit the floor as much as he should, because he's a talented guy that can score the basketball as well. So it's tough to see the team fall like this because they have so much talent and they just can't seem to put it all together.
6 of 28 versus Cal from three-point range.
They don't need to attempt 28 threes.
No, they don't. They're a team, like, go back. Like, I remember, I know they lost to Florida Gulf Coast a couple years ago. Part of that was because the two very, I know I'm not going to compare the two teams, but Gulf Coast, you've watched, they still do this now, despite not having Andy Enfield there. They were up and down, fast break, breakneck pace. Aztecs want to score. Like, this 60-point range is fine for the Aztecs. The problem is, they're not efficient. That's kind of the big difference. And the defense isn't as good. And, you know, this loss, like, are two things. KenPom, even though Washington State is 6-3, they've now lost Aztecs to the two worst KenPom teams in the Pac-12. Cal, 167, Washington State in the Legacy is 188. So they lost to those two teams. Great, good job. This home loss against Cal is the worst loss at home since Northern Colorado beat them in their first year in Division I basketball.
I said it's a new low for this program, at least in the new era, since Steve Fisher has come on. It's just not a game that you should lose. You have so much talent on that roster. You're playing against a Cal in their first year coach, a team that has already gotten blown out by a non-D1 team this year. It's just not a game that San Diego State should lose, but they somehow came up short. And then the next game up, they host Gonzaga on December 21st. And man, that Bulldog team is tough. So that's going to be a major issue for the San Diego State team. And I mean, California does not have that much talent, but they slide into a 2-3 zone, force SDSU to loft up some threes.
That's why they shot 28, because you're not going to guard me, but that only works if you're making it. If you're not making them, let them shoot. Cal packing in. That means you can't get to the big guy down low. You can't get the Pope. And yes, you got to shoot. You shoot the open shot, clearly. But Cal, what's the point of Cal putting the hand up more than just kind of waving at you if you're 4 feet away or going, what's the point of guarding them if you're not going to make it? They would extend the zone, maybe go back to man if you start making it. So it's like, that's not a coaching thing. They were taking the correct shots when they're open because it's given to them. I don't care if you're 0 for 50. If you're open and you're good, you think you're good enough, you're going to take the shot. Problem is, you're not making the shots. And so what is Cal going to do? They'll just pack it in, and odds are four against two down low, whatever it may be, they'll get the rebound when they're packing it in. Unless it's a long rebound, there's no chance. So they're making the right shots. This isn't a coaching thing. This is a guy executing thing, because Cal did their thing. Okay, zone, shoot, Aztec, shoot the ball because you're open. Something's got to give. You got to do something. If you're three-pointer, you can attack a zone. Like, well, no need to go into how you attack and do these things. But, okay, if your shot's not falling for three-point range and they're doing a zone, do some motion. Do something to make the zone extend a little bit. If your shots aren't falling, whip the ball around. Do something. Attack the basket to make the zone adjust. You got to do something. Like, teams will do this. Like, if they're going to shoot threes, they'll either play zone or just play a soft defense and don't let Pope get the ball down low. And then they're not going to be very good at all. So it's not a coaching thing, because they made the right plays for the most part. But it's the thing where, like, real quick, one quote from there from some strength coach who does stuff in that area saying this team is soft. Well, maybe. I don't know. But it's not a coach thing. And one thing I bet Aztec fans are talking about, which is just pure speculation, but not that the hire is a bad hire, but it's the same thing Steve Fisher was late in his career, where they kind of slowly downturned, not to talk about Fisher, but the past couple years, they kind of went down a little bit on offense. So if they have the same guy, the same philosophy, essentially, Dutcher. But you know what I mean? It's like maybe an outside guy would have been a better fit, just because it could have mixed things up more than moving a guy over 12 inches.
It's possible. I think we're still a month into Dutcher's tenure there in San Diego State, and I think we'll be able to figure it out. But it's just... it's difficult what this roster has in store right now. You look at Jeremy Hensley, who shot over 35% from deep his first two seasons as an Aztec, is just 4 of 25 this year from beyond the arc. That can't happen. You can't be shooting 16% when you're supposed to be one of the top perimeter threats. I guess one of the good things is that they get Max Montana back, but he was their top three-point threat last season. He's just 4 of 14 from beyond the arc this year. Matt Mitchell appears to be a decent scorer. He's the top three-point shooter on the team right now. And you don't only need to shoot threes, obviously. You want to get some scoring inside and outside. But even against teams that run man, like I noticed that against Arizona State in the second game of the year, they just settled for so many jump shots when they could have attacked the basket. And I don't know if that's a personnel issue or that's a coaching issue, but something needs to change, because they can't end up coming up short in these games against teams like Cal, or maybe it comes down to a home game against Colorado State or New Mexico or something. You just never really know with this team. When they have an off shooting night and the defense isn't there, they might come up short in a game that they should have won, just like we saw on Saturday.
Yeah, because Montana back, he was 0 for 6 from 3-point range. It's like, well, come on. All right, let's move on. So let's move to the next team. Let's go to Boise State. They are apparently, I did not know this, best start in school history of basketball. 9-1. That's pretty impressive, right?
Definitely. And they could have been 10-0. They came back in that Iowa State game without Chandler Hutchison, which is pretty impressive. They came up short in that one. But this team has been, I would say, a pleasant surprise in this league. And no one expected them to be bad by any means. But going on the road, winning a tough game against Oregon, they throttled Loyola Chicago, who just beat Florida in Gainesville the other day.
Oh, that's right. So, sorry, Brandon. Apologies.
Yeah. Oh, man, he wasn't happy about that one.
No.
So they actually have a couple big games coming up, too, the rest of non-conference play. They host Grand Canyon, who maybe isn't as good as most expected heading into the season, but that's still a pretty good WAC team. And then they go on the road to play SMU on December 18th, a team that they beat last year at home in Boise. So they do have two more opportunities to pick up quality wins before they host Colorado State in the first game of league play.
So with Boise State, really quick, they're not going to be ranked this week. No Mountain West team is going to be ranked. Is that safe to say with Nevada losing two close ones?
I think that's safe to say, yeah.
Are they the only team? Is anybody else getting votes? So you have Boise State with one. San Diego State got one. Nobody. I was gonna make a comparison. Never mind. That's I throw that goes my part of the show right there. Sorry. So no team will be ranked. Boise. I don't know what to say. They beat Portland, who's not a good team. Oregon. We mentioned them, the buzzer beater. Sac State's awful. So I guess they get Grand Canyon at home. That'll be a big one. But SMU. We'll talk about that next week a little bit. But that's gonna be a pretty good matchup. It's they're just playing well. Like, is this? Should we consider, let me ask you this, should we consider them maybe the best team in the conference?
I think Nevada is still a better team, and we've seen, I mean, Nevada's played the tougher schedule to this point, going on the road hypothetically against Texas Tech and TCU, and although Boise State did pick up a big win at Oregon, I think the Ducks aren't nearly as good as most people think. So I still hesitate to say that Boise State's better, but I think, and I've said this before, that the most impressive thing about this Broncos team is even when Chandler Hutchison is on, they just continue to play their game and continue to look smooth on offensive defense, and they've been dominant against the bad teams. They've been impressive against the better teams. So I think that road game against SMU will tell us a lot because the Mustangs are pretty solid this year. But yeah, this it's a good team, and they have a lot of bright spots there. They have good shooters, and they've been playing a really solid defense.
Yeah, I thought they were better because Oregon is 147 RPI, so it's not very good. They snuck by a bad UTEP team who fired, or sorry, coach quit. So like that, Loyola Chicago could be a good win. It's a top 100 if they do something special and can get back on track after that. I'm not sure if they've done since in the Valley. No, they're 10-1, so there's that for them. Okay, that's good, right? 10-1 for Loyola. Maybe they'll get off a good run, and that'll help out that victory get a little bit better. But, yeah, they haven't played anybody great, really, besides Iowa State. Like Southern Utah. Did you know at this moment, Southern Utah is a better RPI than Oregon?
Wow. That'll change.
No kidding. Once league play, Pac-12 play. See, that's the thing about playing a big-time conference. Washington State, like, they're – well, Ken Palm's a little bit different, but, like, they're 150. They'll be, like, move up to, like, a top 75 team after they play – Arizona, UCLA, and Utah or something, mm-hmm. right? So yeah. Let's see. So maybe that win for Boise could be a top 50 win at some point. The coveted and hated top 50 wins by Gary Parrish every year.
That's right.
I will bring that up all the time because he's exactly true, and hopefully these road stuff matters. And so that road win at Oregon, that could be, let's say Oregon, like honestly, they could be a top 80 team. Is that far-fetched RPI? Do you need that?
I think that's fair, and I'm pretty sure the category one, you know, we talked about that grouping before.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure 1 through 75 road games or road games against teams that are ranked in the top 75 in RPI are category one wins. So I think that'll be really big for Boise if Oregon can stay in that top 75 range, and then Boise State could finish the season with a category one win, which would be huge for their for their resume. And I will make this point though. You mentioned asking me if Nevada's worse than Boise State. I do think Boise State has or could end up with the better non-conference resume. So
they
do carry that. Yeah, I do because they carry that road win against Oregon, which, like you said, could end up with a column one victory there. And they also have the chance to win on the road against SMU. So they could potentially pick up two category one wins. And I don't have all the category designations in front of me, but Nevada's best non-conference win will be at home against Rhode Island, and if Rhode Island doesn't stay in top 30, I believe that won't be a category one win, so Boise State would hold the advantage 2-0. So
what about neutral real quick? Because Illinois State is a top 100 team. They blew them out. How does neutral work then for that category one or two wins?
It's not weighted as heavily as road wins,
Of
so
course.
I don't think that's going to be a category one. That might be two or three. I'll have to check these numbers back in the coming days or so, but I do think the Boise State non-conference resume will look much stronger than Nevada's at season's end. So if Boise State pulls off a number of these league wins, and like we said, the same thing with Nevada, if they don't have any bad losses and they win on the road, I think they might have a more attractive resume on Selection Sunday than Nevada.
Interesting. One quick note on Illinois State. I'm like, let me check their schedule. You know, they're only 4-6 and still a top 100 team.
Have they played some tough teams?
They lost to Florida Gulf Coast. They beat South Carolina. There's that. Boise. They beat Tulsa. They beat Quinnipiac or Quinnipiac. Is that what they are?
Actually, that's Quincy,
Oh, Quincy.
whatever that is.
Oh, not Quinnipiac. Okay. They lost to Charleston Southern. Lost to Nevada, of course. Beat Tulsa, lost to BYU on the road, and lost to Murray State.
So they haven't played a soft schedule by any measure.
It's weird. It's okay. It's a decent schedule. Like BYU's okay on the road. Boise's good. What's Tulsa? They're usually okay, but that's odd. All right, we need to wrap this up quick. I know we don't get to every team, but we don't need to make this super long. Let's go to Wyoming. We talked to Cowboys. We did not talk about them last week. We're not going to talk about the games too much, but what is there an official nickname for Auditorium Arena, or did you just kind of go off on the poll on our Twitter account just because?
Well, I think Wyoming has named it the Dome of Doom. So I wanted to play off that and see what people thought. I don't know if you have the stats in front of you right now. I can go check it. But I put out a poll question the other day asking if the nickname Dome of Doom for Arena Auditorium is cool or lame.
I'm
And
looking
the
for it.
initial returns came out very heavily favoring lame. But I think cool made a significant comeback. I would imagine Wyoming fans got to that one pretty quick. And I'm sifting through it right now. I don't know if you've seen it yet.
I haven't found it yet. It's a
Dang,
here's
we
the
tweet
thing.
a lot.
Is it very difficult? Here we go, I found it here because somebody put a joke out. It's MWY or cool lame. They go really lame, cool. I work for them. It's 0% lame. So far, we are really lame by 3 votes.
It
But
happens.
it's all in tongue in cheek. Yeah, is Wyoming's Dome of Doom cool or lame? I don't know why it's lame. I think it's pretty cool, right? Is
I don't know. I feel like it might be kind of lame.
What would be a good nickname then? So, because here's the thing, the obvious choice is do some sort of cowboy related, right? Like do something with the West. So what would you come up with it? Hey, somebody come up with AIM. Here's my thought. If you don't like a name, and you got to come up with something better.
Yeah, you're right on that.
Do you have something
You're
better?
right on that. You gotta do something maybe with. I guess playing on dome is a good idea. Off the top of my head, I can't think of anything. I don't know. Dome of Doom, it kind of seems kind of. I don't know. It doesn't really scream intensity to me. It doesn't really. I don't know.
I would
It's
say
not
it's
doing
not
it
a
for me.
I would say it's not a bad name. I've seen worse. I've heard worse. I do like
Do you
to
know
comp.
anything that's worse?
Have to think about it. Yeah, wise guys. I'm just saying. I do like the comment. It says you mean to repurpose Bond villain's secret lair. Did you see that comment? That was a good one. And then somebody put Dr. Evil's on the side of a mountain there. Because for whatever Austin Powers that was in the third one, I think it's whatever. It's if you have a nickname, I don't care. Like I don't have anything atop my head because I haven't thought of anything. But here's the thing: they're good at home. Nobody wants to come there. What would you rather call it? The Cowboy Lair? That's kind of lame too, right? What do
Yeah,
you?
that. Yeah, we don't need any more of those.
It's like I don't know. It's
But walking to the Dome of Doom and then seeing CBI banners, I mean.
oh, there it is.
That one's not going to settle well. Yeah, I'll think of something else and I'll put it out
See,
there.
what they should do is just stick with the I think Air Force does like welcome to 7220 or something like that. Just go with that. You know what I mean? For the altitude. I think it needs to stick.
I like that.
It needs to go something along those lines. But it's not the best name, but it's not a terrible name. So, and it also, here's the thing, they back it up at home too. They are a tough team to get at home
Oh, yeah.
to beat them. And so I don't care. You can call it the wimpiest or lousiest name you want. If they get victories at home, you can't complain about it.
Definitely. It's funny because we got one comment that said something about like the arena auditorium in no way compares to Viejas or Taco Bell Arena or Thomas and Mac, and that happened literally minutes before San Diego State lost home to Cal. So watch what you say. We're paying attention. So
I replied to there. I put I just put a simple. They do have a solid home court edge. I would say it's definitely a better. Here's the thing. If we're gonna let's do this right now. If we rank the home court advantage, I would probably say, is UNLV still number one? Perhaps when they're really good. I don't know. Maybe not now. But I would say, okay, here's what I put. I would say, because over the past years, we've discussed this the past few years, home court is tough to defend. I mean, tough to get victories against. Fresno has won at San Diego State. San Jose State has won at San Diego State. Teams go into UNLV and beat them. Teams go into the Pit and beat New Mexico. And so home getting road victories is very difficult. Going to Air Force, it's hard. It's not going to be an easy win. Probably a win, but it's going to be tough. So I would say if you're going to put these home arenas, honestly, Polk's top three, they might be the best home court edge right now. Nevada, maybe Nevada, then Wyoming. I'd say it's better than Boise State, I would
definitely
think.
Yeah.
It's close, obviously, because they're all good at home. But Wyoming, I would say they could argue for number one. I wouldn't say that's out of the question. I wouldn't say clear-cut number one. But when UNLV's really good, I would say UNLV and the Pit, but they're both not really good this year. Maybe UNLV's getting there. We still want to see more, but not the Pit. I would say like Nevada, UNLV, Viejas is really good when they're good, but they're hit or miss this year.
When every team's at their peak, what would you rank your top five?
Top five? I would say, oh man.
Like every team is playing at top 20 or top 25 level.
That'd be awesome, nationally. But let's see.
Yeah, I know. We can dream, right?
I would still say UNLV.
Okay.
I'd say Thomas and Mack, the Pit, and then Viejas. That's a tough top three. I think those are the top three by far when they're the best. I would probably, here's the thing, Nevada's only been good, really good this past couple of years. Nevada than Wyoming? I'd say Nevada. Here's my thing. Those top three I mentioned are the top three in any order. But I'd probably say what I mentioned, UNLV. Actually, no, I would say the Pit would be number one.
That's what I would go.
Yeah,
would
I'll go Pit, UNLV, Viejas. Well, Viejas is really good too. I'd say Pit number one. UNLV and Viejas are right there. That's the first tier. Then next tier would be Wyoming, Boise, and Nevada. I'd probably put Boise at the tail end of that. It's tough, man.
You don't think Utah State would be higher than Boise
State? Oh, the spectrum. Dang it.
Yep.
Man.
Yeah.
Honestly, in this league. I would say if it was, I know, Big West whack, honestly, spectrum could be top two, top three at their peak.
I would probably go.
Just saying. People can get at me, but go ask guys like on the scout guys Utah State. I've unfortunately never been to a game at the Pit. Well, neither, but at the Spectrum. But when they were like really, really good, like when BYU came to town, or when like those big games with Long Beach State was really good and they came to town to play Utah State, that would sell out. They had they won 30 plus games how many times in a row? 25 plus games. I honestly, as a Spectrum were to get back to that, they would be taught, they'd be contend with the Pit and Viejas and Thomas and Mack.
I think where I would go with this, I would have the Pit number one. I think that is pretty definitive for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd go, and this is assuming every team is at their peak, like top 20, top 25 level. I'd go the Pit, then I would go Viejas, then Thomas and Mack.
Okay.
And then
Spectrum? I don't know, man.
I think so, but I think what we've seen out of Nevada and Reno the last couple of years has been pretty impressive too.
It's tough, like when they're that good. See, you threw me for Utah State because they haven't been that good for a couple of years, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. That's a good. We'll have to come back to this. We'll need to think about this a bit more.
Definitely. Regardless, there are at least five or six buildings. When one of those five or six teams is good, you're almost guaranteed a loss. And that's pretty impressive to have five or six teams in the conference that are just that good at home and have passionate fan bases like they do.
All right, let's wrap this up real quick. Let's talk Utah State since we mentioned them. They played in the newly minted, apparently 30 years to making Beehive Classic, which is a joke.
30 years.
Hey, I got you. Hey, Eli, do you want to pay $50 for Upper Bowl tickets to watch Weber State, BYU, Utah State, Utah?
No,
Would you like to play three figures for near court side, mid court side?
I'll go shoot hoops in the garage.
We need to finish our horse game, right?
That thing. That's right, yeah.
It's like that. Like, that's not of importance to people around here, but it's like, they always, like, I'm not from here, but I've been here long enough to know, like, basketball used to be, like, yeah, Utah football finally got good. BYU football has been good, what they've been doing the past however many years with Lovell Edwards. This used to be basketball no matter what. You could sell out the crappiest game, Utah playing whoever. Part of it when you have Rick Majerus in town, you have Andre Miller, Michael Doliak, Keith Van Horn, sorry, Jimmer Fredette at BYU, or even like Utah, like I said, Utah State, when they had guys, I forget who's on their team, JC Carroll, I mentioned that guy, he's still pretty good. He was good for them, but like, they were really good teams. And it was always a basketball school, no matter what, or state. They wanted to do this tournament. It's like, I get the point of not being a real tournament because you can only do, is it one non-exempt tournament that's an actual bracketed? Is that correct?
I believe so.
And so that's why Utah doesn't want to be locked in, or BYU, because you can go to the Maui, the Legacy, the Coaches vs. Cancer. Well, that's different, but some sort of bracketed tournament, a Cayman Islands thing. You don't want to lock yourself in. So I get the point for that. But like, promotion was terrible. Students got in, I think, for $10 every University of Utah student. But like, it was just a joke. Like, nobody showed up. My buddy went there. He paid $60, had Upper Bowl tickets during halftime of game one, went down to sell like 10 rows back. It's wow. Like, if you want people to go, like, this wasn't promoted well at all by the schools or anything, and you think it'd be a big deal. And also, think of it this way. This is the perfect weekend. There's no college football going on outside of Army, Navy. Everything, there's like, it's not championship weekend. It's not Thanksgiving weekend where it's packed with people out of town. This school's still in session, so it's not, and most students in the area aren't really far and wide travel. Like University of Utah, most people live in town or within 45 minutes of the area. You know what I mean? Like, if you go to Utah, you're usually local. If you go to BYU, decent local. You know what I mean? Like, you're usually from the area for the most part if you go to these schools. And nobody shows up. They don't promote it. They make tickets outrageously priced. I get it for two games, but I went to a triple header years ago at where the Houston Texans play. There was games like, yeah, Texas A&M, LSU, when Houston was really good with, I think, Ralph Sampson was their head coach for a little while. Maybe, I'm not sure, but there was a triple header of really good games. I paid like $30, set 10 rows back for a triple header.
Wow.
I'm like, come on, they got to promote it better. And then Utah State goes there and they play, they play Utah and lose. It's like, well, okay. But it was just a joke because it's one of these tournaments that people build up so big. It's just a mess. They'll do it again next year, but Utah State, man, they are near the bottom, middle of my pack of my power rankings, I'm thinking. Not that high. They're 5-6. They're not doing very good. I just want to mention that tournament game because they lost Utah by 10. First game with, what's his name? Why am I blanking on what's his name who transferred? Doliet? No, not Doliet. Collette, right? Collette? Dave Collette?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if you watch this pregame, if you're there, he gave a very half-hearted handshake to Coach Duryea, hugged multiple assistant coaches and players.
Interesting.
And so he showed up at 13 points. He did 7 rebounds, a couple blocks. But like, here's what I don't get about this game. Did you hear about why like the starters didn't really start this game?
I didn't, no.
The first half, starters had 2 points.
Oh, you sent me that. Yep. Yeah,
I didn't look into it. I just realized it again now. I should have looked up for the podcast, but there was a deal. Like, I don't know if there was something going on, but it was all bench points.
Taylor and D'Angelo Isby combined for 46, and Marilyn McEwen had a combined 6.
I don't know what the deal was with that. Maybe there's something. Do we miss some punishment or something? I don't know.
I'll try to see what I can gather this week, but that's definitely interesting, and I guess Utah State's exploring some depth. They sure have been messing with their lineups a lot this year, and that's not only due to who's playing well and who's not. They've been dealing with injuries since the summer. They finally have both McEwen and Pierre back, but that was an odd box score that you sent me when pretty much everyone on the bench has at least 7 or 8 points, and none of the starters have more than 2, but... I guess a good thing against for Utah State, excuse me, is that they've been competitive just about every game. Even their 13-point loss to Gonzaga, they led that one late. They besides Without the Gonzaga McEwen, game, too. Yeah, McEwen, yeah, exactly. But all the other games they haven't lost by more than 10 points, so they they've been there in just about all their matchups, and they've played some good teams. They played Valpo, BYU, Utah, Gonzaga. So I think Utah State's competitive. They're still not that great, but I guess they're just trying to find some answers right now. And if there is something that's going on with their starters, that would be interesting to see what they do moving forward. But
really quick,
they don't have that much time to figure it out.
From this game, Kobe McEwen fouled out in just 16 minutes of play. He didn't score, had one assist and four turnovers. And Duryea called his game, his performance, quote, just awful. In every area, mentally, physically, on the defensive end, on the offensive end, he was worried about things he shouldn't have worried about. Dang, that's pretty harsh.
That is harsh, but I mean, McEwen is arguably top three, top five most talented players in this league, and there's no reason why against an in-state rival that you should attempt four shots, miss all of them, foul out, and have four turnovers. That doesn't happen for a team, for a guy that should be playing pro ball in a couple years.
Yeah, and this team, like, University of Utah knew what they're doing. They stuck on McEwen the whole game. Him and Merrill were just, Utah's defense just smothered them, and Utah was up, like, by 21 points, I believe, 20, 21 points. They came back. Aggies made an 11-point game at the half, but it was just, it's just a weird game. Like, I couldn't watch because I'm Pac-12 Network, of course, which is another weird thing about the tournament, that, or just these games. Utah State, Pac-12 Network, BYU Weber State was on some local BYU TV channel.
That's not how you get people to turn into your tournament.
It's like, I don't need to get to the local TV scene, but if it's not a, if you can't get it, say ESPN or CBS Sports wouldn't have picked it up. Fox Sports could have. The reason Pac-12 because Utah, but they're in all, they're four different leagues. And so it's like, you have Pac-12 part of it. But here's the thing, all of them are on an ESPN network. That's a potential. Weber State's, who knows, I'm not familiar with their schedule, but what they could have done locally, there's a channel like that's local sports. It's just like those alternate, like my TV channels. One of those things. Why couldn't have that been local, at least locally aired here in the state, where anybody in the state of Utah could have watched it? It's like, that would have made sense instead of being on Pac-12 Network. I know BYU TV's nationwide. If you want to watch that game, great, but put it on a channel everybody can get. If it's not on ESPN, CBS, or Fox Sports, whatever, get it on a channel that people in your area can watch.
We can have the same discussion about the Mountain West Missouri Valley Challenge as well, because they've had fair shares of lack of TV issues. Let me ask this before we wrap up. Do you think that there's a case we made that D'Angelo Isby is the best scorer on the Utah State team?
Why not? When your best guy scores 0 points? Yes.
He's been impressive this year. He's had a number of games in double-figure scoring, and he's pretty much been one of the only consistent offensive outlets for this team, which is shocking when you have a guy like Sam Merrill and also Kobe McEwen. But
well, maybe not. Real quick, hold on. Maybe not. 2 points versus UC Irvine and only 8 and 7 versus Valpo and BYU.
Yeah, I mean, I guess 8 and 7 isn't the worst, but you do have a couple lackluster games in there. But for the most part, he's been good for at least 11 points.
Yeah, for sure. He had a 0 points, but he only played 8 minutes that Portland State game. He didn't need to play. But I'd say maybe. I would say he's probably the third scorer on this team that has the potential to lead the team in scoring once every three games, which is what they need. They need some sort of third scorer. Like in this game, McEwen hardly plays terribly. He scores 24 points. They need Isby to be a guy where, say, Merrill I'll stick with this Utah game. When your stars aren't playing well, he's the guy that can step up. That's what they need him to be. So he's a guy where probably their third scorer. I think, is he third on the team in scoring? I think he would be. Let me double check here. Yes. No, second, actually.
The point being made, I guess, is that Merrill and McEwen have not been quite where we would expect them to be, and Isby has probably exceeded expectations at this point.
Yeah, that's probably the best way to put it. So those three guys are averaging more than 10 points. And yeah, McEwen, Montana State, and BYU, that's about it. And who cares about Mississippi Valley State? It's 11 points. Come on. He needs to show up in big games. And he has a couple times, but I would expect him to get closer to 17 than 11.
Yeah, so that is fair, yeah.
Maybe they'll pick it up in league play, but Isby, I could say he's I don't think he'll lead the team in scoring, but he's going to be a guy where, not boom or bust, but he is, I'd say, it's hard to say because McEwen's so good. I'll say this, from what we've seen this year, Isby has the potential to have the best scoring game of any player on this team.
I think that's fair.
He may not, but he did what he could in this Utah game to lead this team. I would say the most consistent scorer is Sam Merrill, just because he's doing quite well. But I'd say Isby most potential to blow up so far from what we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that's all we got for tonight. If we didn't talk about your team, sorry Air Force, sorry Rams, sorry Spartans. Fresno State, fill up your stadium. Fill up Safe Mart. Maybe we'll talk about you.
Ouch! So, throwing shots. Sorry. They're winning games though.
They are winning games. Let's talk about women's hoops for quite half a second because we're both going to fake this, but New Mexico women's basketball beat Navy, who was 9-1. They are undefeated at the moment. They are not yet ranked. They better be ranked on Monday. We may have to talk about women's hoops if they keep doing this good, Eli.
Definitely, yeah.
Because we need to give love to everybody. This basketball, we didn't say if it's men's or women's. They are 11-0. They've beaten Marquette, who is ranked top 20. Wichita State, they beat Illinois by 30 points. Jeez, that's a big one.
Oof. I think that Marquette win was in overtime as well. That was a pretty crazy game.
Texas Tech by 40 points.
They're running guys out of the building.
Can we
get a little bit of that share on the men's side?
Oklahoma? They got Oklahoma coming up. Can we can we just say we want UConn? Is that safe to say, or is that too bold?
Oh, man. You know what happens when teams say we want Bama? That does not end well.
That's like say, but women's hoops, we want UConn? No, we'll pass. We'll see. But pay attention to them. They're 11-0. Oklahoma's usually good at women's hoops. I'm not here to say how great they are or anything, or how good their opponents are or not good, but I see they rank team to beat Marquette, like you mentioned, by 1 point. But they're on most of the games are on the Mountain West Network. So they got Texas Tech. Oh, that's recently. Sorry. Yeah, they go to Oklahoma. Maybe that's on. I don't know. If you can find out, watch it. But here's what you got to do, guys, if you're going to this game. They host Lamar December 20th. Ugly sweater night. You got to go to that game. Oh, yeah. You can get, wear an ugly set sweater. Excuse me. Get a $5 bench seat. Not that we're pimping for tickets, but man, geez. And really, not to kid, but this team, like New Mexico Women's Hoops, they are one of the few teams in the country that actually gets people to the games, like Tennessee, UConn, Notre Dame women's basketball is really good. They're one of the few programs that actually fill out the stadium, or a majority of it compared to 1,000 or 2,000, where it's not a ton of people and go to women's hoops. We're not going to kid anybody on that front. But they send people there, so they're undefeated, and maybe we'll need an article or two from them. So we'll see. But check them out if you get a chance. And, yeah, that's all we got to say. We end on women's hoops. That's what we do here. We talk about everybody. So
you mix it up.
Also, we made a – if you didn't listen to our football show, we're no longer biased against your team, folks. No longer. Apparently, that's being retired by – I got outvoted 2-1, apparently. That's okay. That's fine.
Majority rules.
I'll go with it. And if it slips out, I'm sorry, but that's what we do here. We're going to – if it slips out, blame me. But we're not going to do that. I guess we're peak coverage. Is that what we're doing now? That's what Matt said.
How did you end the football show?
I just said we'll see you next time. Boring, right?
Mm-hmm. We'll figure something out. I don't remember what the CBS guys do, but they seem to have some sort of continuity with how they end their shows.
That's why I like bias against your team and said, like, peace out, we're done. But that's all we got. We'll think of something. If you have a comment.
Maybe it's just peace out, we're done.
Yeah, but peace out's what the guys on the ESPN Fantasy Football show do, so I can't copy that. That's oh man!
Huh. But, we'll all right, so
we'll figure it out. We'll think of something. So I don't know what we'll do, but check out our show MWWire.com. That's our website. We're on Blog Talk Radio, TuneIn, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcast, you'll find us there. And I guess I'll end up boring and see you next time, folks.